בוק טוב.
Shalom lechem.
So our last meeting of the year, and we'll launch into the introduction to lessons 19 through 22. Do the introduction and then see how far we get in lesson 19. This will then hopefully give you something if you want to work over the summer. And then what I'd like to do early next year is roll you over into the Hebrew reading group, and we will cover these next few chapters at the beginning of the quarter in September, October. It'll be good for that group to review this stuff. So, page 226. So in notes, we've covered much of the ground necessary for us to read passages of biblical Hebrew. We've covered morphology and grammar. Morphology, the particular form that individual words have, grammar, so how words are formed and what the meaning of individual words are. Now in lessons 19 through 22, we'll look particularly at narrative passages, and we'll look at what's called syntax, which is how sentences get put together. These lessons will be a fairly brief introduction to a wide field of study, and we'll give you some guidelines. You won't find rules that writers of Hebrew had to follow, but a report on what we observe that they usually did. And this is a field of study in which there's been tremendous development in the last 20 years in understanding the syntax of biblical Hebrew. The many books that make up the Hebrew Scriptures written by many different authors over a long period of time, and over time the language changed. And so we find differences in how Hebrew writers use the language. Then there are also variations because different dialects were used in different areas. So the Hebrew that we have in the Hebrew Bible spans almost 1,000 years. We face also another problem when we discuss how words are used in biblical Hebrew. We can't always be certain that the words we find in our old manuscripts are exactly as they were written. Manuscripts were copied by hand. Mistakes were made. There was developed a scribal culture in ancient Near East that paid very careful attention to the copying of manuscripts. Even so, occasional mistakes got it in. With the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls, starting in 1948, which were 1,000 years older than any previous manuscripts, one of the remarkable things of those is how little had changed in that 1,000 years, thanks to this history of careful, this culture of careful scribal copying. For these reasons, when we're discussing Hebrew usage, we often cannot say this is what we always find. We need to say this is what we usually find, and also say that our understanding often is provisional. We don't have an ancient Hebrew writer here that we can sit and interrogate and say, now, why did you write it this way? Explain your syntax to us. We scholars have to try and figure this out based upon a relatively limited repertoire, namely the Hebrew Bible. In lesson 19, we'll look at verbal forms like vayomer, and he said, and vatitain, and she gave. And these are most commonly used to show the next step forward in the continuing narrative. Because of the most usual function, we can call it a narrative form. Or from its characteristic third-person singular form, vayiktol, it may be called vayiktol. So that is based upon the verb katal, which is a verb meaning to kill. It's not the usual word for kill, but this has become the verb that is used, the standard verb that's used for giving the paradigm. It has the advantage that it's completely regular, doesn't have any weak letters, it doesn't have any gutturals, and it's just used as sort of the standard verb for specifying paradigms. So the third masculine singular kal of katal would be, in the continuing narrative form, would be vayiktol. Now, that doesn't actually ever occur in the Bible, but that's what it would be, and so sometimes that's what this continuing narrative form of the verb is called, vayiktol. From its prefixed personal indicators, so yod for he, third masculine singular, or tav for she, second, third feminine singular, or aleph for I, first singular, and the prefix va. It can also be referred to as vav with a prefix conjugation, which we shorten to vapc. Now, one of the problems we have is terminology, and different authors use different terminology. In this case, the personal indicators are put on the front, so we call that prefix conjugation. But then in front of that, there is a vav with a patach. So vapc is one of the ways of referring to this, continuing narrative form of the verb. Other ways of referring to it are the vayiktol form, or other forms as well. Lesson 19 will move us a step forward with the discourse analysis we began in the introduction to lessons 4 through 6, and that was covered on pages 35 through 39. In lesson 20, we'll build on some of the ideas we began to study in lesson 8. And back in lesson 8, we saw two sentences in which the subject va'avshalom came before the verb. In one case, information was being given. In the other, a previous event was referred to. So those are what we call noun clauses. Normally, a Hebrew sentence begins with a verb. These are noun clauses. Lesson 20, we'll look at a variety of ways in which sentences and clauses may begin. And we'll consider particularly passages where the placing of a noun or pronoun at the start of a sentence or a clause may mark a number of things. It may indicate a new section. It can resume a narrative after a digression. It can bring a sentence to a close or a section to a close. It can introduce new material. It can modify a previous statement, or it can be for emphasis. But there's some reason why the narrator has departed from the normal pattern. The normal pattern would be a continuing narrative form of the verb. And when he departs from that, then you've got to ask why. And again, we don't have the author present to tell us why, so we have to use our wits to try and come up with some understanding. Sometimes it may mark more than one of these things at the same time. The characteristic introduction to such clauses and sentences is vav with a shava, prefixed to the noun or pronoun that begins the clause. For example, Genesis 24:1, v'Avraham zaken. Now, Abram was old, and we'll begin that as background information. Lesson 21, we'll continue our study of the use of perfective and imperfective verbal forms. So remember, Hebrew verbs can actually come in three patterns: perfective, imperfective, and then the continuing narrative form. As we saw in the introduction to lessons 7 through 8, forms like katal, amara, and shalachnu may be called perfect because they often refer to past time, or perfective because they usually refer to some kind of definite action or state. Or they may be called katal, from which is what the third person singular kal of the paradigm of the katal verb would be, or they may be called suffix conjugation, because the personal ending is joined to the end of the stem. So this makes it confusing because we've got four different terms could be used to describe that form of the verb: perfect, perfective, katal, or suffix conjugation, SC. In lesson 21, we'll refer to it as perfective SC because it seems useful to think of it as connected with completed or definite action, and to remember that the personal indicator is added to the end of the stem, that is, it's suffixed. Forms like yiktol, he will kill, and tivke, she will cry, may be called imperfective because they usually refer to action that is either continued or in some way indefinite. Because the personal indicator is prefixed to the stem, they may also be called prefix conjugation. And we shall usually refer to this type of verbal form as imperfective PC. And in grammar books and dictionaries, you also find that the imperfective may be called imperfect or future. So there, too, there are multiple ways of describing this: imperfect, imperfective, yiktol, or PC prefix conjugation. Somebody gave a table of the different jargon.
74 has different...
Yeah, that's the one I was looking for. Page 74, the different terms that some of the main grammar books and dictionaries use to describe these three forms of the verb. Now, this is going to seem a little confusing, but the best way to get to grips with this is just use it, and familiarity will come with use. So, over the page 228, when we use the terms VPC and PC, we must keep in mind the basic difference between the two. Both conjugations show the person by a prefix. Yod, Tav, Aleph, Nun. But they have a different history. VPC forms are derived from an earlier past tense. Now, this is something that's only actually been fairly relatively recently appreciated, that the vayiktol form and the yiktol form, they seem to be the same, just with a va put on the front of the one. And they are the same morphologically, so they look the same, except for hollow verbs. That's verbs where the middle letter is a vav or a yod. But their history is different. So the continuing narrative form came from a completely different form of the verb, a past tense of the verb, of what we call a preterite.
So there used to be past tense?
Well, it's always been a past tense. So yiktol form, which is a prefix conjugation, refers to incomplete action, which could be past, present, or future, but is viewed as incomplete. So it's an aspect of it. Whereas the continuing narrative form of the verb, this va-pc, is always describing past action. That's always past and completed, and always has been a past tense. And it just happens that over the development of the language, it has come to look the same as the prefix conjugation, just with the va prefix to it. But it's always been a past tense. It's what we call the preterite, which is essentially simple past tense. It's the main backbone of narrative writing, as we'll see in lesson 19 when we get to it. Since an early stage in the course, you've been aware that perfective and imperfective verbal forms do not by themselves indicate time. Remember, I've been trying to drum this into you, and this is true also in Greek. Those of you who've been taking Greek, the difference between present verbs built on the present stem and those built on the aorist stem. Lesson 21 explores a very wide range of English tenses which we will need when we translate perfective and imperfective verbs. So there isn't a one-to-one correspondence of English, of Hebrew form to English tense. And you have to use some judgment to know how to render them. Lesson 22, build on the foundations we've laid and look at the links between sentences and clauses when they occur following one another in a sequence. And remember, the difference between a sentence, a clause, and a phrase. A sentence is an entire unit. A phrase cannot stand on its own. A clause usually has a verb in it, but you can have clauses and dependent clauses and subclauses. So phrases are built up into clauses, which are built up into sentences. And that will be looked at in lesson 22. And then lesson 22 also looked more closely at sequences in which verbs are linked not by va, but by v. That is, by verbs of the form vkatal, so that's a vav shava prefixed to a suffix conjugation, or vyiktol, so that's vav shava prefixed to a prefix conjugation, which we can describe as an abbreviated VSC and VPC, where SC and PC are suffix conjugation and prefix conjugation. So this will help us in our reading of Hebrew to be alert to distinguish clearly between forms like vayiktol, VPC, vyiktol, VPC, and vkatal, vav prefix to suffix conjugation. And then he notes that these four lessons form a unified group of lessons. Okay, with that little introduction, we're ready to launch into lesson 19, the usual narrative form, VAPC, called Vayiktol and he killed. So narrative forms like Vayiktol and he killed, Vayitain and he gave, Vayevk and he wept, and Vayidaber and he spoke, and Vayet and he turned, often but by no means always mark the next step in a continuing narrative. But that's the usual assumption is it's the next verb that happens on a narrative chain. And this is really the best way of thinking how a Hebrew narrative unfolds. So we have the storyline. We have a storyline that progresses, and it progresses with a series of VAPC forms of the verb. And we get a whole string of them as we go along. But the narrative of a section may begin, it may begin with a VAPC form of the verb, but it may begin otherwise, with a perfective, so suffix conjugation verb, with a clause containing a participle, with a clause without a verb, what we call a verbless clause, or with a VAPC. In those first three instances, depart from the normal chain. So what we sometimes say is that they are off the storyline. So off the storyline, he's saying we can have a suffix conjugation, or we could have a participle, or we can have a verbless clause. And then he won't discuss this here, but then the third element of a narrative will be dialogue, will be speech. So those are the three components that we'll get of any Hebrew narrative. And then the study of Hebrew narrative is to see how the narrator is moving back and forth between those. Okay, a narrative or discourse may occur as a single verse in Hebrew or as a connected series of verses. And we'll see that the opening of the discourse or the way the scene has been set will determine how we should translate a VAPC verb. So, as always, context matters. Always note the initial va, so vav with a patach before the prefix letter. That indicates a person, so that va indicates that we're on a continuing narrative form. And before an aleph, it's the patah lengthens to a comets. So for example, vayikra, and he called out for third masculine singular, or vaekra, first singular, I called out, for the patahs lengthened to a comets. Vayomer, and he said, third masculine singular, and for first singular, it's va'omar, where the patah again is lengthened to a comments. So, section 2, a perfective verb, suffix conjugation, may open a narrative and then be followed by a va'pc, narrative form. In Psalm 40, verse 2, we have a perfective, kiviti, followed by a va'pc, va'yet. And he turned, and another one, Vayishma, and he heard. So we have Kavo, Kiviti, Adonai, Vayet, Eli, Vayishma, Shavati. Let's say that together. Kavo, Kiviti, Adonai, Vayet, Eli, Vayishma, Shavati. So, kavo kaviti is I waited anxiously. So we have an infinitive followed by the suffix conjugation. So repeating the verb for emphasis, waited anxiously for the Lord. Then the first continued narrative form, vayet, and he turned to me. And then a second continuing narrative, vayishma shavati, and he heard my call. Genesis 39:14, back to the Joseph narrative. Notice the perfective, ba, he came, followed by the narrative, va'ekra, and I called out. So we have ba'elai lishkav imi va'ekra b'kol gadol. So this is Potiphar's wife relating her tale. Ba'elai lishkav imi va'ekra b'kol gadol. So ba is a perfective, And here best translated as it's something that happened in the past. Before then, she picks up the continuing narrative. So he came to lie with me. And then I called out with a loud voice. Genesis 39:1. Note the perfective Hurad, which is a Hufal. He had been taken down, and then the narrative form Vayiknehu, and he had bought him. So we have Vayosef, Hurad, Mitzrayma, Vayiknehu, Potiphar. Vayosef, Hurad, Mitzrayma, Vayiknehu, Potiphar. So we begin with a noun clause, so vav, noun, and perfective. And this we really had best translate as a pluperfect. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, then Potiphar bought him. What I've given you, handed out to you, is my color-coded versions of, so this is what I do for any narrative, is color code how the storyline is working and what these forms of verbs are. So in the light blue, cyan, I put all the va-pc forms of the verb. So you'll see that in this case for chapter 37, the narrative opens with a va-pc form. Vayeshev, Yaakov, Be'eretz, Mugre, Aviv, Be'eretz Kanaan. Then Jacob dwelt in the land of his wanderings of his father, the sojourning of his father in the land of Canaan. Now that actually completes the previous section. And then with verse 2, we have a whole new narrative starts, which is really going to be the story of Joseph. And that begins with several off-storyline clauses, which I, off-storyline stuff, I indent one level. It begins, Ele Toledot Yaakov, that's a verbless clause. These are the generations of Jacob. Then Yosef Ben Shuva Esre Shana Haya. So we have a verb, but the verb is six words into that clause, and it's a perfective form of the verb, and specifically the verb haya, so I color that one way. We finally get our first va-pc form with the vayave. Then Joseph brought, that's a hifil, Joseph brought dibatam ra'ah, an evil report to their father. Then verse 3, we go off the storyline for another noun clause, for Yisrael ahav et Yosef. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his brothers. V'asa lo ketonet pasim, and he made for him a multicolored coat or whatever sort of coat that is. So the PC forms of the verb I put in green. And that helps see how this narrative is unfolding. Okay, point number 3, section 3. We can have a participle followed by a narrative form. In the course of a narrative, the scene may be set for a new section of the story by the use of a participle or a series of participles with the following va-pc verb to mark the first main action of the new section. And participles I put in purple. And there's one in verse 15 on page 2. The hene to'e basade. And often you find these participles with hene, with look and see. Look. In that case, he was wandering in the field or in the open countryside.
So Bernard, the blue, the darker blue, mm-hmm. on the second verse.
Yep. That is a perfective, but I tend to do something different when it's the verb haya. That's reason that that's not in green. So in 1 Kings 13, verses 1 and 2, there are a couple of participles, ba coming, and here too we have a vehine, and look, or see, and behold, and omed, standing, and then we switch to a vapc form. and called out. So, Vehene Ish Elohim Ba Mehuda Bidavar Adonai El Beit El The Yarovam Omed Al Hamizbeach The Haktir Fayekra Al Hamizbeach. So it begins Vehene, and behold, and see. And Vehene, the best way to think of that is just to think of this is a movie, now our lens zooms in. And vividly we see this. See a man of God coming. Now, ba is ambiguous. In form, it could be third masculine singular perfective, or it could be masculine singular participle. They look identical. In this case, because we have hene, hene is always followed by a participle. So that's what helps tell us that that is a participle. A man of God coming from Judah. So as a participle, especially with hene, we're zooming in on it and we're seeing this man. It's as if we're seeing this man coming along. Coming from Judah, by the word of the Lord, Bidavar Adonai, by the word of the Lord to Bethel. The Yerovam, and there is Jeroboam, and Omed, another participle, standing, and we see him now standing, stationary there, as sort of this ongoing state. At the altar to offer sacrifice, Fayekra, then he called out, and then at that point our narrative chain launches. Then a little further on in verse 11, we have another participle, Yoshev, living, which gives background information about the old prophet, and the narrative form, then we have narrative form, Vayavo, he came, and Vayisaper, and he told. Which then move the narrative along. So, V'navi echad zaken yoshef beveitel vayavo v'no vayisaper lo. So, we begin with it's a noun clause with a participle. Now, there was an old prophet, yoshev, living, so that's describing his ongoing state, living in Bethel. That's background information. And then we pick up the narrative, Vayavo Beno, and then his son came and told him. Okay, so that's the second way the narrative can begin, is with a participle clause. Third way is a clause without a verb, followed by the narrative form. So verbless clause. In the course of a narrative, the scene may be set for the continuation of the narrative, or information given which will help in understanding it by a sentence or clause without a Hebrew verb. And we then usually will need to supply the verb. In English, it's hard to have verbless clauses or verbless sentences. Numbers 3:3-5, note the introductory, Ele Shmot, these are the names, in verse 3. And then in verse 4, the two VAPC forms, Vayamat, and he died, and Vayikahen, so he served as priest, which continued the information. And then verse 5 of APC form, Vayidaber, he spoke. So we have Ele Shmot Bnei Acharon. These were the names of Aaron's sons. Vayamat, Nadav, Vaavihu, which he translates as, but Nadav died and Abihu. So these were two of his sons, Vayikahen Elazar. Then Elazar served as priest, so that's the third son, who now takes over as high priest. And then he says, the narrative then begins at verse 5, Vayidaber, then the Lord spoke to Moses. Although I think this for probably actually I would disagree from Dobson. I'd actually take the narrative as beginning with verse 4 and take the Vayama and the Vayakahen as actually being on the storyline, not off the storyline. And then fifth, point number 5, the fourth way a narrative can begin is with a straight VAPC. And lots of narratives do this, and lots of whole books of the Bible do this. In addition to its usual functioning of continuing a narrative, a VAPC form may be used to begin a narrative or start a narrative afresh. This is most common when the vapisi verb is vayehi. And so actually, really, you consider one can consider vayehi as a special case all on its own. It's not rather than a regular vapisi. The book of Jonah, we saw, begins with vayehi. Shows that we're entering a narrative. Vayehi, devar Adonai, al Yonah. The word of the Lord came to Jonah. Within a narrative, if there are many events happening, the vapisi forms may follow each other in rapid succession. 1 Kings 13 through 14, we get va-yach-beshu, and they saddled, va-yirkav, and he rode, va-yelik, and he went, va-yimsa, and he found, va-yomer, and he said. So five vapisi forms in quick succession. We have va-yach-beshu, lo, ha-chamor, and they saddled the ass for him, va-yirkav, alive, and he rode on it. Vayelik acharei ish ha-Elohim, and he went after the man of God. Vayimsa ehu yoshev tachat ha-ele, and he found him sitting under an oak tree. Vayomer alive, and he said to him. Now the string of five verbs indicating a series of actions, five actions, doesn't show that the passage is particularly dramatic or of great importance. It's the simplest way of describing how the old prophet reached the place where the next important story, part of the story, will unfold, the invitation back to Bethel. So what you often get here is, but it's worth paying attention to, because now with five quick verbs, the narrator has moved the action along, and then he'll slow down to focus upon what the next thing is a speech. So the end of verse 27 of Genesis 37, this handout, through verse 28 and the beginning of 29, we get seven vapisi forms in quick succession. And then it slows down to show us what Reuben says. And sometimes these verbs in quick succession will then cover a substantial period of time, and then the pace will slow down to focus in upon the activity that will take a very short period of time. Verse 31 and 32 open with six vapisi forms of the verb, and then things slow down with the speech. So what happens very quickly, then they took Joseph's cloak and they slaughtered a kid goat and they dipped the coat in the blood and they took the coat of many colors. And they brought it to their father, and they said, so boom, 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 quickly unfolds. And then now we slow down to get this dialogue between them and their father.
What's the question? Your arrows, that means they go up.
My arrows then show whether the clauses, these clauses that are off the storyline, are referring back to the previous clause or on to the next clause. So, for example, the first of those upward arrows I have at verse 4. And the first half of verse 4, we've got two vapisi forms of the verb with the brothers as the subject. So then his brothers saw that it was him that his father loved more than all of his brothers. Then they hated him. And they were not able to speak to him in peace. So not able to speak to him in peace really is referring back to they hated him. And what we're given there is we're told one thing in a positive sense, and then we're told the same thing essentially in a negative sense. So they hated him, and then they were not able to speak to him. Those are essentially the one is explaining the other, the one is reinforcing the other, and then I'm suggesting that then is a climax to that little scene. So, those are various ways in which a narrative can begin. At some point, the storyline will start with a vapisi form of the verb, but it might be preceded by a perfective, so SC, suffix conjugation, by a participle, or by a verbless clause. And one has to ask, why is the narrator beginning it that way he's usually giving us some sort of background information. Section 6, use of the perfective within a narrative sequence. Where there is a sequence of narrative VAPC verbs, a perfective may be used A, in negative statements, or B, in explanatory statements. And so here, for some reason, we go off the storyline, and the narrator is doing that deliberately for some reason. So negative statements, below with a perfective. So that's what we have there in Genesis 37:4b. Below, yakalu, or yoklu, dabaro, they were not able. Yoklu there is a perfective. Suffix conjugation, they were not able. Within a narrative event, if a negative statement occurs, it's expressed by velo, followed by a perfective. Genesis 39:6. Notice the vapc vayazov, and he left with the perfective yada, he knew. So, vayazov kol asher lo b'yad Yosef, velo yada ito ma'uma. So he left. Really, that's a strong term for leave. He abandoned everything he had into the hand of Joseph, so into Joseph's care, responsibility. V'lo yada ito, and he did not know anything, or didn't let himself know anything, really, so he didn't concern himself about anything. So there we've got a negative statement, which in this case helps reinforce the previous statement, and so that too would form a bit of a climax in this case. And so negatives I then put in gold in the way that I just, but I draw them out and color them a particular way. 1 Kings 21:4-5, notice the three VAPC forms and then a perfective akal, or rather a negated perfective. Vayashkav al mitato, then he lay down on his bed. Vayasev et panayv, and he turned away his face. Velo achal lachem, and he would not eat any food. And then back on the storyline, vatavo eliv, Izavel ishto, then Jezebel, his wife, came to him. And then perfective forms of the verb can be used to explain or amplify a previous statement. Genesis 39:4, notice how the sequence of VAPC verbs, vayimsa, and he found, vayisharet, and he attended, vayafkidehu, and he appointed him, is followed by a sentence with the perfective natan, he gave. So we have vayimsa, Yosef, hen be'enayv, then Joseph found favor in his eyes. First point of the narrative, Fayisharet Oto, and he served him, but this isn't sort of an abject slave, this is serving of waiting on as an attendant. Vayafkidehu al Beito, and he put him in charge of his household. So that's three VAPC forms in a row. And then Vakol Yeshlo Natan Bayado. Now we get a noun clause with a suffix conjugation. And all which he had, he put in his hands or into his care. Which in that case sort of amplifies the previous clause. So that means that what we have with the last two clauses, we have a little bit of a chiasm. So we get a VAPC form of the verb and then the noun. And then the next clause, we get the noun, and then a SC form of the verb. And in a case like that, those really are parallel statements, the one amplifying the other. If the last sentence had begun vayetain, which would be the continuing narrative form, and he gave, it might have suggested that after Potiphar put Joseph in charge of his household, he then committed his possessions into its care. The use of the perfective natan combined with the placing of the object before the verb indicates that committing his possessions into Joseph's care was part of what was involved in putting him in charge of his household. So those are simultaneous actions, but by doing this, the narrator is drawing attention to that, and it serves as a little bit of a climax by repeating himself with just different terms. Okay, section 7. VAPC forms. Up to this point, we've fixed our attention on the main function of VAPC forms. They usually carry the action of a narrative one step forward. So they're the next verb on, that's what a narrative, Hebrew narrative really is, primarily is a string of VAPC verbs. But they get used in other ways. Already in this lesson, we've translated Vayiknehu, and he had bought him, not as, and he had bought him, not as, and he bought him. So translated as a pluperfect, which, yeah, may be okay as a way to translate. Nevertheless, the narrator has put the Vayiknehu as the first verb on his narrative chain. In Numbers 3:4, we translated Vayamat as, but he had died and not, and he died. Although there, I'd say, but the narrator is using those verb forms to put them on the narrative chain, not off the narrative chain. There are ways he could have done it to have them stay off the narrative chain. So now we'll see why we translate them such. When translating a VAPC verb, we must notice the setting or context. So yet again, can't overemphasize how important that is. And we must consider what kind of discourse we're dealing with. Now, discourse is the term that we use for, really just for a story, but paying attention to how that story is being told. It's not simply the dialogue that happens within a story, it's the whole telling of the story. We have to consider particularly whether we're dealing with continued narrative or with information, the information here being implied that it's information off the storyline. So Jonah 1:5, the Yona Yarad el Yarkate Hasafina Fayishkav Fayeradam begins with a SC clause, so noun, Vav noun SC, so now, which we could say is now Jonah had gone down into the Yarkate, this would be the deepest recess of the boat. And that's given to us as background information. It's not part of the storyline. It's off the storyline with the SC form of the verb. And then the story picks up. Then he lay down and he had fallen fast asleep. We saw that when a sentence begins with a noun or pronoun followed by a perfective SC, it may indicate previous action. And that's what it is here. Such references to previous action often provide information which helps the reader or listener to understand the continuing narrative. So Jonah 1:5b begins Vayona Yarad, which is perfective. In the first part of the verse, the narrative has reached a stage where the sailors are praying to be kept safe from the storm and they're throwing the cargo overboard. To understand the captain's action in waking Jonah up, we need to be informed that he had already gone below and fallen asleep. The opening of the second half of verse 5 with Vayona Yarad instead of Vayered Yona shows us the type of discourse has for a moment changed from narrative about the next action to information about a previous action. So we're to imagine what the narrator achieves by this, I think, is showing that while all this busyness is going up on deck, the sailors crying out to their gods and hurling their cargo overboard, that at that same time, Jonah had gone down into the hold of the ship. Otherwise, it would be implied that he was present while all that was going on, and then he went down. But instead, we're to envisage that he had gone down while all this was going up on upstairs, and that should set up in our mind this dissonance about the behavior of the two sets of people. So when we read the continuation, Vayishkav, Vayeradam, we translate them as he had lay down and had fallen fast asleep. We don't translate them as he lay down and he fell fast asleep. For we're not at this point dealing with continuation of narrative action, but with a continuation of information concerning previous action. I think actually there I disagree with Dobson on that. This gives you an illustration of the fact that this is still a developing field of study. Really what I'd say is that when Jonah had gone down, now that it gives us background information that launches a new sort of subsidiary narrative. And the narrator then puts Vayishkav and Vayiradam onto that narrative chain, because he could have used other SC forms of the verb to keep it off the storyline, like in Genesis 37, verse 3, where we had Vayisrael Achav et Yosef. Now Israel loved Joseph. Carry on, and then V'asa, and he had made for him a coat of many colors, or a coat of long sleeves. And we have two SC forms of the verb, two perfective forms of the verb. So the narrator could have done that in Jonah, but he doesn't. Genesis 39:1, there's a similar use of Vapc, Vayiknehu, and he had bought him. The story of Joseph begins in Genesis 37, and you may have wondered why we skipped chapter 38. It's a digression about Judah and Tamar. Well, it is a digression. It actually becomes very important for understanding the story later on. Sets up Judah's character. The story of Joseph was last at 37:36, with Joseph being bought by Potiphar. And then the narrative resumes at 39:1, and this is an item of information that needs to be brought freshly to the minds of those who follow the story. It's not a new event. So the first item of information is introduced by the perfective, Hurad, it's a hopeful, which follows the subject, Yosef, and then second item, Vayiknehu. So we have Genesis 39:1, Vayosef Hurad Mitzrayma. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. So that is giving us information that we already had at the end of chapter 37. Summarizing that. Vayiknehu Potiphar, which he then takes, and Potiphar had bought him. Well, that actually now is new stuff on the storyline, because we hadn't got that far in the storyline at the end of 37. We got as far as Joseph being taken down to Egypt, but not yet Potiphar buying him. So I actually would take that as being, then Potiphar bought him, as now our storyline resumes, which Dobson would take that as still being off the storyline. Because the type of discourse at the start of 39:1 is one of reference to previous action, we must translate Vayiknehu, which continues the discourse, as, remember, the discourse is the narrator's telling of the story, as "and he had bought him," and not as "and he bought him." Again, I myself would disagree with that. It may therefore be better to think of VAPC forms as being continued discourse forms rather than simply continued narrative forms. And that, I could agree with that, but continued discourse forms, at that point he is back onto his narrative chain, his narrative sequence, his discourse sequence. But we're going to see in sections 9 and 10 they can have other functions as well. Then our final example of a VAPC form within an ongoing narrative is at a point where there's a change in the type of discourse from 1 Kings 21:4. We have a VAPC indicating a main step forward in the narrative, and then the phrase Asher Deber, so a relative clause referring back to what Naboth had said, and then a VAPC, which continues that reference back. And then, finally, a VAPC Vayishkav, which returns us to the narrative action. So 1 Kings 21:4, Vayavo Achav El Beito, Sar Vaza'ef Al Had. So then Ahab came to his house sullen and angry because of the word Asher. Now we get our relative clause, Asher Deber Eliv Nabot HaYisraeli, which Naboth the Jezreelite had said to him, Vayomer, and or which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him, Vayomer, and said. And he's taking that, we've got to take that as put that into the pluperfect, and had said, Lo etein laka, I will not give you et nachalat avotai, the inheritance of my ancestors. Vayeshkav al mitato, then he lay down on his bed, and that returns us to the storyline. So the phrase asher deber, which he had spoken, with its perfective SC verb, changes the type of discourse for the moment from narrative action to reference back. So that's certainly true. Relative clause. So the discourse continuative vayomer needs to be translated when he had said and not and he said. Reference to a previous action can be expressed by the use of a phrase with an infinitive, followed by a VAPC verbal form, continuing the reference back. So in Genesis 28:6, B'varakho oto vayitzav alive. B'varakho, in his blessing him, so we have a bait indicating time, then an infinitive, and a third masculine singular pronominal objective suffix. In his blessing him, sorry, that would be a subjective suffix there. In his blessing him, then he commanded him. So in the phrase varako, when he to bless is a reference to previous action, when he had blessed. So vayitzav carries on the reference to the previous action. Section 8. They kill and they say. When general or habitual action is introduced by a suffix conjugation or a PC verbal form or participle, the manner of expression may be continued by a VAPC verb. And here, context is what helps you determine whether you think this is general or habitual action. So Isaiah 40:24, Vagam nashaf bahem vayivashu, and he blows on them and they wither. So the vagam nashaf, so we have a suffix conjugation form, SC form of the verb there, and then a vapc, they wither, which, so you can think of that as either being so the blowing on them is background action, then they wither, now we have a little very brief story, or that it, here he's arguing it continues a habitual action. Psalm 94, 6 and 7, Almana Fager Yaharogu Vayomaru Lo Yire Ya. So Almana Fager, the widow, and the sojourner, the immigrant, they kill. So context would suggest they're not referring to a particular widow, but this is habitual action. Vayomaru, and they say, the Lord does not see. So we'd argue that that continues that habitual action. Job 6:21, Tiru tachat va tirau. You see chatat, trouble, and you are afraid. So SC form followed by VAPC, arguing that both describe habitual action. Psalm 34:8, Chone malach adonai sevav lirehu l'yerau v'yachlutzim. The angel of the Lord is on guard. That's a choneh participle. Saviv, around, yireav, those who fear him, and he rescues them. And then similar thing for Nahum. So, habitual action introduced by an SC followed by a VAPC carrying that on. And then sometimes the VAPC verb expresses a result or a consequence. So Genesis 49:17. This is in Jacob blessing his sons. Hanoshek ikve sus vayipol rokvo achor. Hanoshek, the one biting, that's an article with a participle, the one biting the heels of a horse, then its rider falls backwards. So he's arguing that we should take the va there on the vapc as and translate that as so, sort of consecutive. So sorry, this might all seem rather technical to you, but this is the best way to get to grips with this is then when you actually start working with a narrative and just seeing this in practice.
So and from this chapter on, it's like a big jump. We were talking about, you know, detailed grammars.
Yeah.
Now we are looking at the whole.
This is a big jump into what is called discourse analysis, which normally is not covered in first-year grammars. A regular grammar wouldn't cover this at all. A regular first-year course wouldn't cover this at all. The thing is, and here I would certainly agree with Dobson, is that to actually know how to read, this is actually very important to understand a narrative and to see how the sentences all fit together.
So this summer we read all of Genesis.
Well, the summer you can then proceed and read, try and read a bit more of the Joseph narrative.
Just Joseph, that's good. Just Joseph.
And then it's seeing how this these verbal forms are working that helps then show the narrative art, and that then helps one. You observe these things, and then you've got to ask, now, why is the narrator doing this? And that's then when interpretation comes in. You can't really do the interpretation until you've observed what he's doing with these verb forms. And that's then an important part of reading. And what I found the best way to observe is to do this color coding.
So do you do this for the Hebrew reading class or just for your own?
Well, I do it for my own stuff, and occasionally I do hand it, if I've got it all together, I hand it out to the Hebrew reading group and then do this for narrative. Yeah. But I've been doing this for probably 14 years or so, doing this color coding. And it was a tremendous help to me, is what really helped me get to grips with how the narratives were functioning. Okay, section 9. Vayaan Vayomer, and he replied. The common expression, Vayaan Vayomer, brings to our attention another use of VAPC verbs. In Job 6:1, Job's reply to the first speech of Eliphaz is introduced by the words, Vayaan Yov Vayomer. Then Job answered and he said, well, clearly we can't translate this as if Vayaan and Vayomer were each introducing a new action. For Job did not first answer and then speak, while Vayaan and he answered introduces the next stage in the dialogue between Job and his friends. Vayomer refers to the same action. So we need a translation like, in reply, Job said. Nevertheless, the narrator has put them as two separate verbs on his narrative chain, and there's some sort of reason as to why he might have done that that we'd have to look at. He could simply have said Vayomer, or he could have said Vayaan Lemor. So then he answered saying, or open quotation marks. So VAPC verbs may be resumptive or explanatory of what has just gone before. And this is particularly common when verbs of speaking are involved. So further on in the Joseph narrative, Genesis 45:24, Vayishlak et Echav, then he sent his brothers away, Vayelechu, then they went, Vayomer Alehem, then he said to them, Al Tergazu ba Darek, and he said to them, don't quarrel on the road. Vayomer doesn't tell us the next event after they went. It tells us one of the things that was involved in the sending away. It's resumptive or explanatory of Vayishalach, of then he sent. Although I would argue it's on the storyline. It's an event on the storyline. It's not off the storyline. So I think that's a more useful way of looking at this, is whether it's things that are on the storyline and things that are off the storyline. All VAPC verbs are on the storyline. Ruth 1:9, but this is, just me disagreeing with him, this is still a fluid very fluid area. And this is all really, it's only been the last 20 years that this has gotten figured out and been worked out. Actually, the Bible translators have been at the forefront of this, like Wycliffe translators and so on, just as they've then sought how to translate the Hebrew scriptures into other language and then paid attention to how discourse works. So if you were to think of it in terms of sort of colloquial English, and you think that at least colloquial English nowadays, particularly a younger generation, might carry a storyline along by putting things in a present tense. And they might say, so he sends his brothers away, so they go, so he says to them, don't quarrel on the way. So he does, so they do, then they do, and that is carrying a storyline along. And that is perfectly acceptable in colloquial English. We all know that if they've gone, he can't then say anything to them next, but this is the next thing we're being told in the story as it's unfolding, and we just automatically know how to interpret that correctly. But it is told as a sequence of narrative events.
Well, if you were to translate it, would you say something like, so he sent his brothers away, telling them not to quarrel on the way, and they left? Wouldn't you move it?
Well, if you want to be strictly accurate in English, yes, you would, but that's not the way the story is being told. The narrator could have said that. He could have said, so he sent his brothers away, saying, so Vayishlach et Echav Lemor, don't quarrel on the way, Vayelaku, then they went. But that's not the order in which he's told it to us. Mm-hmm. So you observe this, you observe, okay, we've got a string of three Vapisi verbs following with a three words of dialogue. Now why? Why do we have that? And perhaps it's because, so what we have ringing in our ears is not then they went away, which would just be sort of plain vanilla, but what we have ringing in our ears is this command, don't quarrel. And that would be a first guess as to why it's being told this particular way.
Instead of
the
15th or 16th, they
went to quarrel. Yeah. So there are two separate stages. There's the observation stage, which is, that's what the color coding can do, and that's what the observer, okay, we get this ordering of verbs, and this distribution, breaking up of the discourse into these three strands, storyline, off-storyline, and dialogue. And that's sort of mechanical. You can color code that, you can just, and do these three levels of indents, which is what I do here. And then the hard stage is figuring why. And that's where you got to think hard, and that's where then you can have people can disagree as to why, and that just takes a lot of pondering. Ruth 1:9, Va'tisena kolan va'tivkena. Then they raised their voices and they wept. She just translates here as they wept loudly, or they burst into tears. We can't translate as they lifted up their voices and they wept, as if they're doing two different things. The Vativkena explains what they were doing when they lifted up their voices. Nevertheless, it was being presented as two things on the storyline. 1 Kings 13:2, Vayikra al Hamizbeach bidvar Adonai, and he cried out to the altar, or against the altar, by the word of the Lord, Vayomer, and he said, Mizbeach, Mizbeach, altar, altar, Koamar Adonai, thus says the Lord. Here the Vayomer resumes or takes up what was first stated by the Vayikra. So it introduces us to the words he used in calling out. Nevertheless, narrator has given them as two separate actions on the storyline. Genesis 40:23, Velo Zakar Sar HaMashkim, but the chief butler, Et Yosef, but the chief butler did not remember Joseph, Vayishkachehu, and he forgot him. Here, remember conveys the idea of doing something to help, and forget the idea of doing nothing to help. The sentence doesn't tell us about two different events, it tells us in two ways about one event. Now, the way it's done that is the first clause, we have lo, a negative, lo with a perfective, and then the second clause, we have a vapisi. So we're being told the same thing twice, once in a negative way, the other time in a positive way. Earlier, we saw that being the other way around. We first get the positive, then the negative. And that is climactic, I think. So we had that Genesis 37, verse 4. And those are worth paying attention to. You can almost translate it as a little piece of poetry because it's we have the parallelism of poetry. We're being told the same thing twice. So I'd actually there would say it'd be better to think of that as, yes, it isn't telling us about two different things. It's telling us two ways about one thing, but it's doing it, specifically doing it in a positive and a negative way for strong emphasis and usually to bring a climax. Section 10, Vapisi verbs in headings and conclusions. It's important to consider how Vapisi forms may function in headings and conclusions. We'll look at examples from Ruth, Genesis. Ruth 1 tells first the story of Naomi's journey to Moab with her husband and two sons and of their death in Moab. And the second part of the chapter tells the story of Naomi's return to Bethlehem. Like all the sections from 1:6 to 4:17, it's structured as a chiasmus, so where we get ABC, then a turning point, and then CBA, sort of in reverse order. The opening, Vatashav, in 1:6 is balanced by the closing, Vatashav, in 1:20, in verse 22a. Vatashav, then she returned. So 1:6, Vatakam, he, Vakaloteah. Then she arose, she and her daughters-in-law. And he translates as she set off. Well, it's she arose in order to do something, which really is that. Vatashav, Misde Moab, and she returned from the plains of Moab. And then it closes, verse 22, Vatashav Naomi, which he takes as sort of a conclusion. So it was that Naomi returned. To say that that is still on the storyline, though it brings to a closure her action of returning. So one could sort of say that the returning begins in verse 6 and the returning concludes in verse 22. That the returning isn't a instantaneous thing. The actual arrival in Bethlehem is recorded in verse 19. Va'telachna shtehem ad bo'ana beit lachem. Then the two of them went. So telachna from halach, third feminine plural. Shtehem, the two of them, ad bo'ana, until they came to Bethlehem. The use of Vatashav in 6 doesn't mean that the return took place before the events recorded in 7. But here, Vatashav is a brief introduction to the next events, like some sort of headline. Announces the theme of the next stage of the narrative. In verse 22, Vatashav doesn't mean that it's at this moment in the narrative that Naomi returned. The function of Vatashav in 22 is to echo the heading and so help the reader or listener understand that the story of the return has been completed. That is true. However, we have to think of the Vatashav returning as being it's a dynamic verb, so it's not an instantaneous thing. The returning begins in Moab and the returning ends in Bethlehem, and all of that is returning, so. But there certainly is that chiasmus going on there. The second half of verse 22, which begins with the pronoun vehema and they, so we get a noun clause, gives us information about the barley harvest, which not only tells us about the time of return, but prepares us for the next stage of the story. And so verse 22 neatly rounds off one stage and begins the next, and it rounds it off by giving us a noun clause off the storyline. Genesis 2, 1 and 2. Notice how the va-pc, vayakal, and he had finished, which is from the verb kala, a third hey verb, the hey has dropped off, helps to close the section about creative work and lead into the section on the day of rest. In 2:1, vayakulu, and they were finished, announces the end of the creative work from the point of view of the created order. Then in 2:2, we get vayakal, summing it up from the point of view of the creator. So 2:2 is vayakal Elohim bayom ha-shavi'i malakto asher asa. Which he translates as, and so by the seventh day God had finished the work which he had done. This is a problematic, problematic verse, unnecessarily, needlessly problematic for people. And then he carries on in verse 3, and there are three more va-pc forms of the verb in 3. Verse 3, and he sanctified the seventh day, and he blessed it. And the problem is of thinking that the kala. Well, the reason we have a problem with this is we think, well, if God finished something on the seventh day, that implies he was still working on the seventh day. But God wasn't working on the seventh day, therefore we have to say by the seventh day, God had finished. Well, there's no necessity of doing that at all. I think it's quite acceptable, and actually it would be better to simply say, then God finished on the seventh day his work which he had done. And that finishing is bringing into a state of completion. And that actually isn't complete until we get into the seventh day. But now it is complete. So I actually think this is driven as much by ideology as by understanding the Hebrew narrative. But all the translations, have this trouble of this. For a similar use of vayakal in the context of completed work, see Exodus 40:33, where vayakal Moshe et ha malaka announces that Moses had finished the work of constructing the tabernacle, which incidentally there are a number of parallels between Exodus 40, Moses finishing the work of the tabernacle, and Genesis 1, the Lord doing creation. I think they're clearly set up as parallels. Announces Moses had finished the work of constructing the tabernacle, not that he was then occupied with the finishing touches. The Hebrew verb kala is to bring something into a state of completion, and it isn't complete until it's into that state of completion. The narratives in Genesis are particularly rich in headings and conclusions. There's a variety of ways in which headings and conclusions are indicated, and we get here instance from Genesis 37, verses 5 through 8, which you have also my color-coded version in front of you. Vayachalom Yosef chalom, then Joseph dreamed a dream. Vayaged le'echav, and he told it to his brothers. And Dobson notes, verse 5, Vayachalom, he dreamed, tells us about the next stage of the story. So I've got that colored in blue. It's a va-pc form of the verb. But together with the rest of the verb, it provides a brief introduction to the next events, like some sort of headline. Joseph tells his brothers his dream, and they hate him more. Vayosifu od sno oto, and they hated him even more. The Yosifu, Yosef is to do something again or more. So they increased further hating him, something like that. And then in verse 6, we have Vayomer Alehem, he said to them, does not tell us what happened next after they hated him more. It is resumptive, unfolding the significance of Vayaged, and he announced to them. The Vayomer introduces the words in which he told the story which caused his brothers to hate him. True, but nevertheless, the narrator is giving us these as events along his storyline. It's a sequence of events on the storyline, not necessarily the sequence of events in strict chronological sequence. And there'll be a reason why the narrator is presenting us in this order, usually because he's wanting to focus upon the speech. And this is very characteristic of Hebrew narrative. It contains lots of dialogue, and that's what the narrator usually is focusing us on. Then in verse 8, Vayosifu od sno oto, so they hated him even more, rounds off this short section about the first dream with a repetition of part of the introductory verse. And the narrator is being very deliberate about that, and we get what we call an inclusio. At the same time, the mention of dreams, this time plural, opens a way into the next section of the narrative, verses 9 through 11. So, a summary. A narrative or discourse continuative, so notice now he's changed from continuing narrative form to now discourse continuative, which I would agree with him on that. So it's the verbs that carry the discourse along, the discourse being the telling of the story. VAPC forms like Vayomer and Vayakam, they can do all these things. One, most often indicate the next step in the continued narrative. Now, if you think of that in strict chronological terms, then you're going to have problems because, as we've seen, and here I'd certainly agree with them, it isn't always what happened chronologically the next event. But it is always the next event in the way the narrator is telling his story. So it's the next event on the discourse. So essentially, and here, this is getting into a bit of literary theory. In a story, there is a mapping of an event onto the story. So an event happened, and then a story is told about that event. And in general, the sequence in the event will be mapped by the sequence in the story, but that won't always be true. The storyteller, for reasons, now, he may be simply forgetful and had gotten his order wrong, but we have to assume that he knows what he's doing, and that's certainly true. We assume for biblical narrative a reliable narrator that he knows what he's doing, and so that when his sequence doesn't match the sequence of the event, that he's doing it for some deliberate reason. So what I'd say with the VAPC, it's always the next verb on the story, and the narrator is presenting them to us in that particular reason. And that might include some, what we call, dischronologization. It's a big mouthful of a word, but it might dischronologize things slightly. But usually for some sort of emphasis. And that will then explain, really, the next, all these remaining points here. VAPC forms are not used to express negative statements. That's true. Negative statements are always in some sort of way, they're off the line, but whether it could be for emphasis or for climax. They are used to carry forward various types of discourse, reference to previous events, and what is generally so, or i.e. habitual actions, but they're on the storyline. They're used to explain or amplify a previous statement, or they may be used to help mark the beginnings and conclusions of narrative sections. And really all of that I just think is actually most helpful. I just think of them, and it's a sequence of events on the storyline which need not correspond to the sequence of events on the actual line of what happened in history. There is this mapping going on. But there we're getting into literary theory and more detailed narrative analysis, which is a little bit beyond where we should be. That brings us to the end of the lesson, except for section 12, which was reading Genesis 41. This is a major new step forward, as you pointed out, and the best way is just read and see how this is working out over the course of some sort of narrative. And the best narratives to do this with are fairly short narratives, so Ruth and Jonah work really well for doing this because they're each four chapters. So Jonah, you've done all except chapter 2, and chapter 2 is poetry, so it's really we just have three chapters of narrative to see how this works out on. I think you've got my color-coded version of that. So just observing how this is, and then just with practice. Reading is good about then the narrative analysis, being able to both observe what is going on and then try and understand why. Okay? So in September, we'll resume on Thursday mornings. That's when the reading group is. And we'll start back in at lesson 19, and we'll go back over this. This will be a good thing for the reading group to resume, probably draw on other resources.